Morning, members. I'd like to bring the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Representative Cornish, would you like to move the minutes with one change? Mr. Clavin was listed as a testifier, and he did not testify.
Would.
Cornish moves the minutes as amended. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Members, we've got four bills before us this morning. The first bill is my bill. It's the 1326. It was here before when the waste folks had some issues with MPCA, and it's my understanding that's been worked out. I'll move House File 1326 to be approved and move to GovOps. Mr. Kadelka, if you want to walk through I've got the A5 amendment. Members, I'd like to move the A5 to get the bill in the shape I would like. Discussion of the A5. All those in favor of the A5 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. The bill's now in the shape. Commissioner Kadelka, welcome. Do you want to explain the A5? Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and thank you for having me back on the bill. The A5 amendment makes three changes. The first is we talked about at the last hearing about the definitions of recycling and some potentially unintended consequences by creating some uniformity throughout the statute. We had discussions with a number of groups and decided it would be best if we hold off on those changes. We have a legislative required solid waste policy report that is due at the end of this year, and that's where you see a number of sections being taken out, sections 4 through 8. 11, 16, and 18 taken out of the bill to have that come up at a later time. The second change deals with the reporting, streamlining reporting for waste haulers and facilities along with government units. We had some discussions with the waste industry. There are some changes in the amendment, including waste industry being part of the consultation and the development of the long and short form, and some other changes asked for by local units of government. The third change is line 1.20 on the amendment, and it is a typo correction. We unfortunately put in the wrong reference in the plumbing code, and we've made that correction. And with that, Mr. Chair, any folks have any questions, that's the amendment.
Thank you. Questions to the A5. We probably should have somebody, Mr. Carnival or somebody, going to come forward and let us know your thoughts on the issue. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record and maybe let us know your thoughts on it, and then if you want to touch on the fact that some of it got taken out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, representing the National Waste and Recycling Association, McGrand Shea Carnival Law Firm, Minneapolis. Yes, we had the opportunity to visit with the PCA since the bill was before you last, as we discussed the issue of the redefinition of recycling and the inclusion of the word reuse and how that might impact recycling, we came to the conclusion that it made sense to not have that in the bill and defer those discussions so that the unintended consequences that I mentioned at the last hearing wouldn't occur. So there'll be continued discussions with the agency to ensure that we don't reduce the recycling in the state or what's counted as recycling that should be appropriately counted. With respect to the amendment, we did discuss the amendment, and we are in agreement with the language of the amendment. It does include reduce a duplication of reports, and we are continuing to work with the agency to develop reports that can be filed with various levels of government so that the hauling community is not required to provide different data to different organizations, and it will streamline the reporting process. So we're in agreement with the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, and thanks for working on it. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is the clarification. Representative Dill, I know, will be glad to hear that I had a conversation with our Roseau County Environmental Officer and our mayor of the city of Roseau this morning with some concerns about the bill. I don't think that they saw the amendment, but we do have some concerns there, and I just want clarification, Mr. Chair, on your intentions and the agency's intentions. I was told this morning that at this point, and I don't quite understand all the technical stuff here, but through their SCORE funding and so forth, they got to file reports, the county does, and we haul it over to the Marquette landfill. Everything that's being done is being done by the county at the county level. It's their understanding that now the haulers, the independent haulers that bring materials to the, what's it called, the collection site, the tipping station or whatever it's called, will now also be required to file reports, and he says that they are redundant. So I'm curious to know, we're trying to streamline things here, where are we at?
Commissioner Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the change is part of a law change from a number of years ago where we are working with the solid waste administrators, counties, and that to reduce the number of reports that you just talked about that the counties have to file for SCORE. The idea would be, it, right now, haulers and waste facilities, the recycling haulers, all report to the county and the county reports to the state. What we'd like to do is move to a system where the facilities and haulers report to the state and we're done. And the goal is there is to pull out the county so there isn't that need. Because right now, a hauler may have a territory that covers a number of counties, and the goal is then they don't have to break that up. They can get that information to us, and through a new database system we have online, that information would be available for others to pull in the future.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it is a big issue. I know there's a big meeting tomorrow morning in Thief River Falls with regards to waste hauling and the Marquette landfill, and there's a lot of concern about how the MPCA is proceeding on some of these things, and I'm responding to the concerns of my constituents, Mr. Chair, and I want to make sure that we are doing exactly what the bill is intended to do, and that is to reduce reporting and make it easier.
Well, anybody? Thank you, Representative Fabian, and it is going to GovOps, so if you hear different, if your folks weren't aware of the amendment, maybe if you could make sure they see the amendment. It was posted yesterday, so maybe they did see it. But if they haven't, if they could see it, and then why don't you get back to me as I head to GovOps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if anybody from AMC is here, I'd like to have a conversation with them at some point.
Okay, and maybe they'll be here later if they're not here yet. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kadelka, I walked in a little bit. Is this a PCA amendment, or do you support it, or is this, did you guys draft it, or?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is an MPCA amendment. We worked with other parties, including local units of government and the waste industry, to draft it.
Thank you. Commissioner Kadelka, I've got some questions I'd like to understand. And I'm thinking this might be a good time because I think I know Mr. Benke is here and other folks involved with this. Does there anybody have any more questions on the bill? But before we actually move the bill, I would like to, Commissioner Kadelka, ask some questions in regards. So I would like to understand how many MPCA employees work in this area that deals with the solid waste and deals with landfills. I'm trying to understand. It's in the land program, I'm assuming. And then are these folks in different units than the folks that deal, like, with recycling and the encouragement? If you could expand on that, and I'm going to have a number of questions as you answer them.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for our solid waste activities, we have a number of prevention activities that fall in the lines of recycling, reuse, and other ways to minimize the impacts of a waste stream. And then we have a part of the solid waste program that also deals with the permitting of landfills and other types of facilities. I don't have the FTEs on that in front of me. I can get that information to you. I know we have a breakdown on some of those costs in a spreadsheet that we can provide to the committee.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Kadelka. And it was just something I thought about on my way in. So I do have a spreadsheet that Mr. Hagemeyer gave me recently that I asked for, and I apologize to the rest of the committee members, and we'll certainly get this information out. But I wanted to just tee this up. I have some questions. So would these be part of the Integrated Solid Waste Management Group, these folks? Is that the area they would be in?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do look at a holistic approach, so that I'm not sure what's on the spreadsheet, so I'll need to double check and see where they're all located.
This is like 65 FTEs.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and committee members, I'll just need to...
Do you care if Mr. Benke, would this not be Director Benke's area?
It is. If he has the information, we can do that. I don't know if we just need to get back to you.
Okay. You don't want to give it to me now, that's okay. I'll get it later. I can. I want to know how many people are working on this. How many are working and what they're doing. I just thought, as long as we had the landfill folks here, that I'd be interested to know. It kind of goes along the lines with Representative Fabian was talking about. I've heard from some county people, and just trying to understand. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Benke, Director of the Resource Management Assistance at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chair, just to make sure we get the right numbers in front of you, if you could let us know what you're looking at for the inclusion in that solid waste activities. We have four different units that provide solid waste activities at the agency and the division. We've got our multimedia assistance unit, which provides household hazardous waste activities. We've got our sustainable development unit, sustainable materials management unit, which provides assistance, including the solid waste policy development and implementation. We have our solid waste permitting unit, which provides our engineers and our hydrologists who do our permitting activities. We've also got our solid waste management unit that does our solid waste planning and our enforcement activities throughout the state. We have some solid waste activities scattered in some of our other units for certification and training and our waste and toxicity. So I can take a little time and provide that back to you and get the exact numbers for you, if that's the breadth that you want to look at in terms of the FTEs that we have. If there are any other activities that you wanted to include from a solid waste standpoint, we could get those FTEs for you as well. Just so we make sure that the spreadsheet you have and what we have match up.
Well, I don't have one to the level of that detail, and if it's all right, I'd like to ask Mr. Hagemeyer, do you have one to the level of that detail yet in your possession?
Mr. Chair, I do not. The spreadsheet you're referring to was from the PCA. It's a large spreadsheet that has the permitting activities from the various levels. I do not have that level. And if you're asking for the FTE information, you might want the cost information with that as well.
Yes, I would want to see the cost, like similar to this sheet. It has a number of FTEs, and then it's got a subtotal total budgeted alongside it, that column. Director Benke, I like that breakdown you gave me of all these different ones. I'd like to see that. But you didn't touch, and I don't think you got into it. It didn't include any of the remediation Superfund or the remediation closed landfill fund. Those were not part of that discussion, correct?
Mr. Chair, no, it did not.
Okay. And how about the petroleum remediation brownfield? That's separate?
That's also separate.
And, Director, is that under your auspices, the petroleum brownfield?
Mr. Chair, no, it's not.
Okay, thank you. And someone from that involved with that wouldn't be here today because they weren't anticipating my questions.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do have Kathy Sather is our director for the remediation unit, which includes closed landfill unit and also the petroleum remediation available.
Thank you, Director Benke. Any questions for Director Benke? I just thought, folks, as long as these folks were here, I wanted to ask these questions. It's in preparation of trying to prepare and understand their budget. I have had a number of people ask questions about the agency. So, Director, if you could come down, identify yourself for the record, and I'd like to ask a couple of questions if I could.
Thank you. My name is Kathy Sather, and I'm the Director of the Remediation Division at the MPCA.
Thank you, Director. If you could, my questions, Director Sather, revolve around, for instance, the Petroleum Remediation Brownfield Program. I'm sorry, I got the wrong one. I want the one that the tank program. Why am I missing the name? When a gas station has a leak and you do that program? Commissioner, help me out.
Mr. Chair, there's two programs. There's the prevention side that does the inspections, which is in our industrial division. There's also the units that's under Director Sather's purview, which is the cleanup after the spill. whether it's through a petroleum program or third-party certifications so that the next developer gets sign-off that they're not liable for things that are there. So there are, we've got, depending on if you're looking more prevention or more cleanup after the fact, it'll depend on the program.
And Commissioner, the cleanup after the fact is a program that you're concerned about the vapors and expanding that program to not only be the tank and the cleanup there, but now to look at the potential vapors. Am I on the right program now?
Mr. Chair, you are.
Correct. And okay, thank you. And then, Director Sather, if you could help me out with getting me the FTEs in that area. And then also in relation to that, I know we did some really important work over the last few decades in cleaning up gas stations, convenience stores that had these problems. How many tanks have we done in the program? And then where are we at today? You know, I know it's gotten more complicated in some respects when we're concerned about these vapors, but how many tanks are we actually doing today compared to where we were? And then just members, this is the blink on, blink off. It's funded by the 2 cent gas tax that blinks on and blinks off. So if you could give me the FTEs in that area. And Commissioner, I think I touched on the ones that we're looking for. Director Sather, I was kind of all over the board there. Did I give you enough direction or do you need clarification? If you could just say yes or no.
Yes.
Thank you. Question, Representative Uglum.
Mr. Chair, thank you. To that point, Commissioner, these programs have been in existence for quite some time, and of course the new tanks that are going in the ground meet the new regulations, double walls, so on and so forth, continuous monitoring and all that. Isn't there a point in time where you're going to see a decreasing curve in terms of what you need to remediate?
Mr. Cadell.
Mr. Chair and committee members, you are correct, tanks are going in and they are better. However, we're still, a lot of the work that comes in on the sites aren't necessarily a result of tanks that are gone in the last couple years. Right. They're ones that we found that are long time ago were there, and they just are now coming to the attention. Usually someone's developing an old property, they start doing some of the excavation work, and they find an old spill, an old tank. Those are the type of situations that come in. So there is work. We can get you the numbers. We're still seeing in the hundreds the number of new cases each year, but we can provide the committee those numbers that we have on sites that we've cleaned up and have closed, those that are still active, and what the churn is of those coming out each year and what are coming in each year.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, well, you must have some projections and things, too, about the life of this program and when you're going to really hit that downward curve where you've taken care of these things. Obviously, there's a finite amount of gas stations and underground storage tanks in this state. I believe you inventory them. So I guess my question is, when do you see some light at the end of the tunnel?
Commissioner or Director, Representative Uglum, we are asking them to give us a history of the number of tanks and that stuff. And so I understand, and they're, Representative Uglum, they're actually wanting to expand the program and jump out into new areas with vapors. So that's, you and I are on the same track and wondering where we're coming from or where they're going. I want to understand where they've been, where we're at today, and then we can bring that into the context when we discuss the budget. And the reason I'm bringing it up today is I thought these folks might be here before us, and I want to give them enough time to prepare as these questions come forward. Representative Uglum.
Mr. Chair, I think we're on the same page.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I know that the agency has heard this before, but one of the concerns that I have with regards to the vapor relates to a small gas station 13 miles south of Roseau and Winnoska. A leak was detected 20-some years ago, and, you know, in the meantime, they've been going through different attempts to try to get it remedied. Finally, this past summer, they were required by MPCA to clean up the site. So you have to remove all the concrete. The tank that had been put in the ground new a few years ago, the supplier decided to remove the tank as well. 10 years short of its life expectancy, but because you're doing all this work, you know, you might as well do it now. Otherwise, you're going to have to come back and dig up the concrete in a few years because the life of the tank is expired. And then, of course, replaced all the pumps as well. Admitted by MPC's own admission, they didn't clean up all of the petroleum products in the ground. Okay? Because some of it went over to the highway. Some of it was maybe too close to the river. I'm not exactly sure of all the details. So now this vapor thing comes along, and I asked the agency, are they going to be responsible for something in the future because of vapors, because you didn't do a complete job of cleaning things up? And the answer is yes. Well, at what point does somebody who's making a good faith effort to comply with the rules get released from liability for this stuff? I mean, this stuff goes on and on and on, and I get it. But at some point, the small business owner in Wanaska, Minnesota, a town of 37 people or whatever it is, has to be relieved of some liability. It makes no sense to me why we're doing it this way. So, and then, of course, the delays in getting them reimbursed, which I realize doesn't come through MPCA, but it's with Commerce, they're still waiting for their reimbursement to the tune of, I don't know, $170,000 or something. And we're not talking about, you know, some large multinational corporation that's involved in this. We're talking about a small supplier of petroleum products in northwest Minnesota. And I'm very disappointed in the state agencies and the regulatory people who oversee these programs, who drag their feet and come up with more excuses, and we don't seem to get resolution to these problems. You can comment if you want.
I don't see either one of them jumping to comment, Representative Fabian. Commissioner and Director, you understand that we'd like some more information on the program, and maybe you can also touch on, I know you get, when you do go in and do this remediation, the property owner gets what is supposed to be pretty clear title, or the new property owner if it happens to be in a transaction. So they're not held responsible for what the conditions are, so maybe you can touch on when the information you give us, where sometimes there's different issues involved there. And Representative Fabian, in some respects, you're saying that maybe you should do it more thoroughly on the front end. I think you might be arguing for their vapor idea, that they're saying we may have to expand this program and do more here now that we're seeing additional challenges before that. But at the same point, it is an expensive program. It's very easy for the PCA to do this because it's very, you don't see it. It's a blink on, blink off. You don't know at the gas station that it's when it's on or off. It's just 2 cents more, and in the scheme of things, you don't see it. So thank you. I didn't mean to blindside any of you, but I thought it would be good while you were here that we get that information. Commissioner, I wanted that to include, and I think I got it, that it would include more information on the closed landfill remediation Superfund folks and a breakdown on those, because those, again, I'm thinking about these ones that are winding down. We've gone through hundreds of these landfills. I think we're in the last three, if I'm not mistaken, maybe four. Wondering how many people are there, and then kind of how has it worked in the process, so we have a good feeling as we go forward. Any more discussion on House File 1326? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I know that we're dealing with some, you know, important recycling and solid waste policies in this bill, but I just wanted to mention that I think there's broader issues that maybe we discuss another day, and issues that you've brought up, Mr. Chair, which I agree with, which is, you know, I think when we look long-term at our solid waste and recycling policies, and we can talk about these definitions of reuse and recycling, but, you know, as long as we have such a high volume of recyclable materials that are still going into landfills and incinerators, I just find that unconscionable. And you mentioned the small example, Mr. Chair, of the paper towels in the bathroom that, you know, we're throwing out that can easily be composted. And, you know, you can not only in our buildings here, but just throughout the state and commercial establishments and homes, businesses, we just see this all the time. At least half of the waste, if not more, can be recycled, composted, reduced, et cetera. So, you know, we can nibble around the edges with these definitions, but, you know, hopefully we can work with the counties, work with the PCA, all of the stakeholders, industry, and really, you know, what are the policies we need to put in place to really get all these recyclables, where they belong, not in landfills and incinerators. So I just wanted to say that for the record, and you know, hopefully we can move forward with something like that in the future.
Well, and to that point, Representative Hornstein, I'd like to know how many FTEs are working on that stuff so we can see our frustration, and so what are we actually doing when we can't, seems to me, do some basic things, what actually are we doing? And that's, I think you and I are trying to get to the same point. Thank you for those comments. I appreciate it. Either one of you want to comment on that? Okay, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Hornstein's, I mean, we all recognize the value of recycling. I heard Mr. Behnke say earlier that he was talking about permitting, planning, training, enforcement, and assistance. The meeting in Thief River Falls tomorrow is amongst county officials, and some of them are actually proposing giving up their SCORE funding and going on their own because it is so complicated, it is so bureaucratic, the assistance that they talk about really isn't there, and when you live out in far rural Minnesota, there's very little market for the things that you are trying to recycle. You can't find places to take these things. And I would encourage the agency, if they truly are interested in recycling and assistance, and I understand the differences sometimes between what's going on down in the metro area where there's more population, but in deep rural Minnesota, it's not the same. And you have to make some basic changes within the structure of MPCA, the way you administer these programs, so that you have people wanting to be involved because it is easy and they do understand the value in it, but you're actually turning people away from the program. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to renew my motion that 1326 be passed and move on to GovOps. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, 1326 is on to GovOps. Thank you, Commissioner, Director, Director Behnke, thank you for coming down or reacting on the hot seat. I appreciate that. Director Sather, thank you. Next bill, Representative Green, why don't we do your House File 824, and Representative Green, is it an oral amendment? Oh, no, we have it in writing. Representative Green, if you want to move your bill for in possible inclusion, and then it's House File 824. Representative Green.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 824 for possible inclusion.
Representative Green, two-year bill, and you have an A1 amendment. Do you want to move the amendment and explain the amendment?
Yeah, I will move the amendment as well. There was some discussion, and what the amendment basically does, the bill would remove some of the permitting requirements for counties and townships on further local roads, and what the it also. What the amendment does, it takes off the improvements and just leaves in the culvert restoration.
And Representative Green, if I remember this, I heard this in transportation, I guess is why I know a little bit about it. This now will allow the townships and local units to go out and do a culvert replacement and not be burdensome with the permits as much. That's the gist of it?
Yes.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Green to his A1. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Green, I think I support the amendment, but I just had a question about a definition here with restoration. So if you're replacing the culvert, it's a replacement. So if, let's say you have a 24-inch culvert, you're replacing it with a 24-inch culvert. That's what the restoration is. It's not it's not your intent that the culvert restoration would be an upgrade to, say, a 48-inch culvert if you had a 24-inch culvert.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that is correct.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion on the A1, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to speak to the bill? Oh, she's back again. Good. All right. Welcome. Come on down. We just passed the A1, members, but the bill is before us. If you want to speak to the bill as the shape is now, and if you could identify yourself for the record.
My name is Julie Ekman, and I am a manager at the Department of Natural Resources in our Conservation Assistance and Regulations section. And I'm
welcome.
Here. I'm here on behalf of the DNR to speak in opposition to this bill. The DNR is required by law to regulate the impacts to public waters. And to fulfill our duty in that regard, we've had a permit program in place for about 80 years or so. So the purpose of our permitting is to make sure that we're giving proper hydrologic review to projects and looking at the statewide interests in the water resources. And through our permitting process, we ensure that these projects are consistent with state goals and objectives, and also that they are in line with federal and state and local environmental quality requirements. And furthermore, we want to make sure that things are consistent with shoreland management and floodplain management. So if this bill were to go forward and succeed, then the permitting would remove our consistent oversight of the design and guidance and how that would impact public waters. Some of the risks involved in not having the DNR's hydrologic oversight include road failure during storm events, which is very costly to local governments, blocking fish migration and adversely impacting spawning success, raising flood elevations of upstream areas, lowering the elevations or even raising the elevations of lakes upstream and downstream, which could impact recreational boating, and also it causes fragmentation to habitat potentially. So everybody needs a permit for this kind of work, including state agencies. MnDOT is required to have a permit for this kind of work. And through that process, then we can apply the best available information that we have and make sure that things are consistent. Thank you.
Manager Ekman, if I could, I thought I heard in transportation that you do a blanket permit for the townships or the county, and so DNR is involved in the process, and they work with the county or local unit of government and offer them a blanket permit. Is that true? So there still would be a permitting process?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have a general permit that we've issued to several counties in the state and also to MnDOT. We don't have a general permit for townships.
Okay, and Manager Ekman, do you, as part of that, is there some understanding or education or thought process anyway so that the people actually putting this culvert in realize that if you're replacing a culvert that you probably shouldn't put it higher or lower because it's a trout stream? Replacement of a culvert is replacing a culvert, not adjusting the stream. I'm assuming things like that, you must, if you're going to do that, some kind of a blanket permit, make some assumptions with those folks. Would that be true?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is true. The general permit itself is developed collaboratively with the recipient of the general permit. And then if someone is going to propose a project under a general permit, they notify the Department of Natural Resources. And then we just have a quick review of what they're proposing to make sure that it is in keeping with the general permit.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green. I'm not in transportation, so I didn't hear the bill earlier, but I think I understand the problem that you're trying to solve here, but could you explain it for me, please, what your bill is attempting to do?
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. The process for replacing a culvert is burdensome, and it's time-consuming. If you're sitting in an agency or even here where that's all you do, that's fine, but the local officials, especially on the township level, they do these jobs as basically volunteer. I mean, they, like in many townships, don't get wages in rural Minnesota. They may get paid for a meeting, or if they have to go out and work, they might get 10, 12 bucks an hour. And so to set them down and or have them take time to go out and run to do permits for simple projects is it's affecting them. And this is not going to change the flow of the water. This is replacing the culverts that may need to be replaced, whether because they're old and rusty or get washed out. That's what this is. And so I don't see a problem there. And also I do believe that if there is a stream or if there is something that or project that's going to be done and it requires a smaller or a bigger culvert, there's another process for that as well. And that's not what this is. This is just replacing culverts that need to be replaced and by the local road authority, people that have been put in charge of keeping the roads safe.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you for the explanation, Representative Green. I think this is a great bill, and it's a good way to empower our local officials to do what they do best, which is take care of their business and their environment. Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to support your bill, Representative Green. I've got a couple of questions. As one of those people that's been out there, former town road supervisor, and I, we're talking just about restoration and replacement of culverts. That's basically what the bill is addressing. Is that correct?
Representative Green. Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, that is correct.
And so, is it correct that we would already have a permit in place for that culvert that's being replaced or restored? Would there have been a permit issued? And maybe this would be a question for DNR.
Manager.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have a permit in place for counties, a general permit. We do not have one for townships. If I may comment to the burdensomeness of permitting.
Ms. Heckman.
We have created an online system, and that's been live now for over a year, and the system is available 24/7. It's very easy to use, removes a lot of the misunderstanding along the way during the permit process because an applicant can check on the status of their permit at any time. And to the replacement piece, there are many culverts that are really very old out there, and when they were put in decades ago, our understanding of ecological systems was different than it is today. So there are many culverts that really should not be replaced in kind the way they were in the past.
Representative Purcell.
Mr. Chair, I don't mean to belabor this, but I'm headed somewhere, believe me. One of my concerns is that the folks that are replacing the culverts, you know, got a tape measure and they know the diameter. The other question is, will they be able to hit the elevation of where that culvert was previously placed? And it's not just a mundane question because things get pretty serious out in the townships, and you know, something shy of a fist fight can occur out of some of these intersections. And this, the question is, and I don't know if townships folks are here, but Minnesota Association of Townships, but what's the liability that's going to be taken on then if the culvert's put in wrong and you flood somebody's basement? That's the question I have, because I've been there and done that, and it's not a good place to be. And so townships do carry insurance, obviously. I just wonder if that's been considered, Representative Green.
Representative Green, you're beginning to understand the bureaucracy that the poor township guy is going through when he just wants to replace a 24-inch culvert and it's a washout, and Mrs. Smith is frustrated, and the bureaucracy in St. Paul is saying, well, you haven't got your online form filled out on line 17, and Mrs. Smith keep driving around the section and go 12 miles farther to get to work at the nursing home. And that's an imaginary Mrs. Smith, an imaginary job at the nursing home. So we need to have the DNR involved in the permitting process, and that's what you're trying to streamline, Representative Green. Do you have an answer to Representative Purcell's question? Sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I can remember the question. But I will tell you that I know the bureaucracy. I served as a township supervisor for 13 years. And not on the school board, but as a township. And I have served as a district director for 5 years. So I know the bureaucracy. I know that it's not as simple as going online. I know that there's also policies that have to be fulfilled. You have to go to watersheds, counties, and also DNR, and it is time-consuming. And as far as the liability goes, this bill, or at least the intention of it, is not to change the specs for how you have to put in a culvert. that still has to be met. And the township people, as you know, Representative Purcell, don't go out there with a shovel and dig that culvert out. They hire people to come and put it in, and it is done. It's done properly. At least the ones we put in were done properly. Whether you get a permit or not, I don't know if the DNR is going to stand there and watch you put that culvert in. I've never seen that, but so that I don't think is a question. And yes, we do carry liability insurance.
Representative Purcell.
And thank you for that clarification, because a little earlier you said that township folks aren't paid and they might be out there with a shovel, and I'm like, okay, this is not what I remember, but so that is that fits a little better. I do see, Mr. Chair, the Minnesota Association Township just walked in. He's busy in a conversation up there, but I wonder if we could get a comment from the Township Association about the bill. I don't know if they've been contacted about this bill. If you'd be willing to give us a comment on this.
Mr. Sullum, welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record. I know you just walked in, but I believe you're probably familiar with House File 824. It's been amended to only say now or culvert restoration or replacement. Take a minute to look at it there, and then if you could reply to Representative Purcell would like to restate the question. Representative Purcell.
If I may, I don't think you're in the room, Kent, but my only concern that remains now is if this bill, as it's been amended, would put any additional liability on townships and cause the insurance rates to go up, something like that.
Mr. Chair, for the
Mr.
record...
Mr. Sullum.
Kent Sulem, General Counsel and Director of Governmental Relations for the Minnesota Association of Townships. And I apologize, I just got done testifying downstairs, so I got up as fast as I could. But we do not believe there'd be any extra liability here in terms of the work, and especially now it's being focused on the culvert. I know I've had some conversations with Bowser about is there any issues that would apply to federal permits. It wouldn't be an insurance claim issue or liability in that regard. It'd be more of a process issue. But I think we are probably able to address that, especially now that it's been amended down. So,
thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. And with that, I can support the bill. Thank you.
Okay. Members, this bill is being laid over. We're not voting on it. But Representative Hausman, and I don't know if anybody else needs to talk on it. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that we added the amendment because that narrowed it a bit, but I am always concerned about unintended consequences of seemingly common sense ideas. And in Representative Nornes has a bill on behalf of many citizens. We had an informational hearing in capital investment. All of these citizens have written us tens of thousands of dollars of damage to their homes because of flooding in the area. And one of the things they cited as a cause when in questioning was a road project. That was one of the reasons. And now the state is going to be asked to help all of these homeowners who are who have tens of thousands of dollars of damage to property. So I always get a little nervous when we sort of denigrate bureaucracy as though bureaucracy is unhelpful, but bureaucracy also protects. So the unintended consequences of seemingly common sense ideas, I think, is the thing I worry about on a bill like this.
Well, and Representative Hausman, to your point, there definitely is consequences when we try to streamline things. There's the potential. I think DNR is certainly well-intended in their points made. Representative Green, any closing comments as you move the bill to be laid over? Oh, I'm sorry. Anybody from the public? Mr. Lincheski, I knew you wanted to talk. Anybody else? Mr. Lincheski, you want to come forward and speak to the bill? Anybody else want to speak for or against the bill? Anybody else? Welcome, Mr. Lincheski. Long time no see. I think it was about 8 o'clock last night.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Welcome Chair, back. Members of the committee. My name is John Lincheski. Thanks for bearing with me last night. Again, I represent a group of conservation-minded anglers, sportsmen and women who, you know, members all over the state, including many members who live in those areas where a dusty vehicle from driving township roads is a way of life, and they're proud of that fact. We appreciate the good intentions with this bill, but I think the representative was right about, you know, unintended consequences could be huge with this. And I just want to talk about two big impacts. First, there's the fisheries impacts. Just so you understand, I give you a couple examples. If a culvert's too high, we had this case in the Strait River. It actually was impounding that river for probably a mile upstream, filling it in with sediment. Physically, you're burying the stream. You're burying all the habitat. You're warming the water. You're making it not suitable for fish anymore. You know, ultimately, when that culvert blows out, then you've got big destruction downstream. So there's a huge impact to the fisheries in the North Shore. We have examples where the state is now funding, you know, $1 million to do some steelhead habitat in the Upper Knife River. You replace one culvert, which is currently, you know, undersized or has become perched over time because of the stream cutting down on its channel. If you just replace that culvert with the same size culvert, you are going to block steelhead passage. So they can do all the work in the world they want for habitat upstream for these fish, but if they can't get to that area for spawning and rearing the juveniles, you've just wasted $1 million. So big financial impacts by just simply replacing what was there. So it's not that simple. So there's a huge cost. I mean, who's going to bear the cost of trying to restore these fisheries? The Game and Fish Fund should pay for this. The legacy funding, it just doesn't make sense. I think it's, again, sort of penny-wise, pound-foolish. The second big impact is, I think, just the fiscal impact to taxpayers in these townships, because actually when you have a culvert blowout, that's Mother Nature telling you something. It's telling you your culvert wasn't big enough. And we see that all over the place. And so to simply say, well, we're just taking that culvert and replacing it to the, you know, this washout, we're just putting in the same size culvert we had or same elevation, it's not going to fix the problem. It's actually much more expensive to just replace the culvert where it is now. In the end, you're going to have another washout. Culverts are expensive to replace, and I appreciate we're dealing with volunteers in these townships. We get that. We're volunteers, too. We're actually a regulated body, too. We have to go through the permitting process as well, but I can tell you that the Eco Waters folks in DNR, they actually have expertise in this, and they're really the one place that has expertise. And, you know, $100 for a culvert, for a permit review, you can't get a consultant to even drive out to one of these streams and give you some advice. So I think it's money well spent. I mean, if the issue is the fee for that, exempt the township from the fees. But I think it's really, really important for taxpayers and for anglers that you have that little bit of review. And so it's really important that you have the experts out there, take a look at it. In many cases, they'll say you're fine, but we can't exempt. I mean, that would be huge negative fiscal impact to taxpayers and anglers if we pass this bill. So I understand the intentions. I understand the challenges of the township folks, but the solution is not to remove this review and permitting.
Well, so, thank you, Mr. Lincheski. I think you're speaking to a more broad range than this bill necessarily applies. Certainly when culverts need to be replaced and size changed and streams potentially altered and stuff, I'm envisioning this dirt road in a low spot that it's got a sinkhole and the combine can't get to the field for whatever reason, and they need to replace this 24-inch culvert. And instead of being able to replace the culvert, now they just got to temporarily fix it because they can't get the permit. So we're just laying the bill over, and so that's where we're at. Representative Green, do you want to any final comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I will move the bill and just remind people that this is not this is just replacing culverts that have probably been there for 30, 40, maybe in some cases more years. A lot of them are rusted out. A lot of them are in places where you couldn't change the size if you want to. I mean, I'm not going to go into all the aspects of dealing with township roads, county roads, but I will tell you that some of them are not much higher than the water levels beside them.
Thank you.
And so, but thank you.
House File 824 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Next, we'll hear House File 668, Representative Neuberger's bill. rocks to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Neuberger, and I believe maybe you have Senator Peterson's also going to testify, I'm not sure. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before I do this, I'd like to move the A15 amendment to get the bill.
Representative Neuberger moves House File 668 for possible inclusion. Representative Neuberger would like to move the A15 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of the A15 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, Neuberger's A15 is adopted. Representative Neuberger to the 668 as amended with the A15.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a simple bill here. It, as you see before you, the language, there's not a lot to it. Basically, what we have here is it's a local control bill that allows locals to go first when deciding about issuing a permit for a landfill for disposal here. It gives them the ability to do this first before anyone else does. They get to finish their permitting process if they choose before the MPCA does. So simply put, this just asks the MPCA really kind of take to step back and wait so that the locals can do this first. This is a real good bill for local control. It gives them a first bite at the apple. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Neuberger. Senator Peterson, why don't you come down if you want to add something, and then we'll take, I think there's a couple testifiers. Senator, welcome.
Thank you.
Could, I think the protocol, the Senator's got to identify, I think you've got to identify yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's John Peterson. I'm the state senator from St. Cloud. I'm grateful.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm grateful for the chance to be before you today in support of this bill. Senator Neuberger is carrying this project in the House and would simply just reiterate, having served in local government myself on the St. Cloud City Council and had run into various cases where state agencies had put local elected officials in somewhat of difficult situations by kind of making decisions before local zoning and permitting had been completed. And this bill simply tries to correct that and just asks, in this particular case, that a solid waste permit not be issued before all the local approvals and zoning ordinance are approved by local officials before it moves forward. It does not prevent the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency from working in conjunction, so the solid waste permit could be issued the day after all the local approving is done, so it's not going to create any delay for the state agency. It would allow them to work at the same time, but just not issue it until that those local decisions have been made.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not sure. Was there a particular facility in Stearns County or in your area that this applied to that you're responding to? Or?
Yeah,
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein. I mean, not at this time. I mean, there's we have a landfill in St. Cloud that's closed at this point, and that's all. You know, that's all water under the bridge. So,
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Well, maybe Mr. Chair, it'd be helpful to get the MPCA's perspective, because my understanding is, you know, generally there are local decisions that are made, you know, for these facilities, and I'm not sure at what point the PCA intervenes in that process, or it would be a better, I'd like to get their perspective on this.
And Representative Hornstein, I was next going to thank you for mentioning and ask if MPCA wants to come down. As Senator Peterson has said, it's my understanding of the bill that the processes can move simultaneously. What Representative Neuberger's bill would do is not allow the actual permit from MPCA to be issued and signed until the local jurisdiction have approved their permit, and then literally the next day, if MPCA has gone through all their process, they could approve the permit also. It does not slow down MPCA's permitting process. And does somebody just want to come forward and confirm or deny that MPCA is okay with this bill? Ms. Gauthier, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The MPCA is fine with this bill. We're neutral on it. It's doesn't change our processes as long as we can work concurrently with the local unit, and that's an option under the amended language. So we are neutral on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Any questions for anybody? Representative Clark.
I just have a question. So if the local unit does not approve it, what happens with the PCA's?
My guess is, Representative Clark, we would never know that they approved it. I mean, the public wouldn't, because they wouldn't publicly approve it. Ms. Gauthier?
Mr. Chairman, I would need to call down a lifeline for that one. I'm new enough to the agency that I don't know that level of detail.
You know what? I'm going to actually ask you. We're laying this bill over. I'm going to ask you to get Mr. Behnke, Director Behnke, if you know the answer, what you would do. I guess, to Representative Clark's point, would the information be public? Could the general public call MPCA and say, what is the status of it? Were you going to approve it? Were you ready to approve it? Director Behnke.
Mr. Chair, members, without the approval of the locals, we wouldn't approve it. But our documents and where we would be at with it would be open for someone to look at if they wanted to do that.
Representative Clark. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. I think we have a couple of testifiers. Mr. Mescott from Chisago County. I'm sorry if I missed your name. Messett, I'm sorry. Welcome. If you could identify who you are and who you represent, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Messel, and I serve as the administrator of Chisago County, Minnesota. I'm actually here today, though, to testify on behalf of the East Central Solid Waste Commission, which is a joint powers collaborative, including the five counties of Pine, Isanti, Chisago, Kennebec, and Mille Lacs counties. Together, we operate a joint landfill that serves over 160,000 residents. Sadly, we came here to testify in support of the bill, but with the author's amendment, unfortunately, we have to voice our opposition. And I really appreciate the comment earlier about unintended consequences. The difficulty we had is, as originally submitted, the bill talked about having the county board have a role in that process, and there was a reason for that, we believe. First and foremost is that state statute actually lists counties as the responsible government unit for managing solid waste via the individual county solid waste management planning process, hence the reason why you need to have some designated lead agency at the local level. The difficulty is that only counties and larger cities really have the resources and the expertise to manage the solid waste permitting process when it deals with a large scale. To have a township try to undertake this without a county or city involvement or the PCA expertise, we think is going to be very, very troublesome and difficult. Why is that important? Because when it comes to local permitting and land use decisions, when you have to put on the record the reasons for your positions, to not have that weight of expertise available, it could be very, very problematic in courts cases. Third is we're very concerned about the issue of too much local control. And believe it or not, it's hard for a county person to sit here and say, we don't want local control. But here's the difficulty we have with responsible decision making. We could have two township officials make a decision in our case that could impact 160,000 residents and multi-millions of dollars of current investment. Now, that's the challenge we do when we put a situation where we don't define or articulate exactly what is meant by the statutory language, hence the opposition. What we seek to do is to try and clarity with the legislation as to what we mean by applicable local units of government and for what level of permitting or decision making. We think there are several options to move forward if this is what the legislature seeks to do. First of all, I think there's an opportunity to consider differing language regarding publicly owned and operated landfills and privately owned and operated landfills. That in and of itself would make a clear distinction between those that already have a very significant level of oversight by elected bodies, be they city councils, township boards, or, in our case, joint powers through five different county boards. Those are multi-jurisdictional in particular. Second, I think you could also consider the size as a threshold for other responsible decision-making, such as the PCA. An example would be what we do with the Public Utilities Commission with large and complex utilities. To be honest with you, we are very happy in Chisago County that the PUC is helping us look at a 100-megawatt solar facility, because we don't have the size or the expertise to do that. Can you imagine when you're dealing with a landfill and the complexity of the economics and the environments? Third is, I think you could consider grandfathering existing facilities, especially if you're dealing with those that have expansion or rehabilitation in plan versus those that are new sightings. And finally, I think if you do go down this road, we would suggest setting up new rules or authorities for dealing with disputes among the local jurisdictions other than the court system. The end product is, we think that this is has an opportunity to be a very good bill and help some clarity. Unfortunately, the way it's situated right now, we think it could end up having a bad law with unintended consequences, resulting, unfortunately, in more litigation.
Well, and Mr. Messel, we are laying the bill over, so I encourage you. It sounds like you're very willing to work with the author and get it something that you both can agree on. So thank you for testifying.
Of course.
Seeing no questions, I believe we have one more testifier from Olmsted County. If you could come forward and speak to the bill, and then we'll be laying it over. Maybe we have two testifiers, it looks like. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Amy Cockett from I work for Olmsted County, and our solid waste manager couldn't be here today. He's in a FEMA training, and the county's people do a lot of different jobs. We're very concerned about this amendment because of the rather large investment our county has made into the solid waste system in our county. Because we have karst geology, and we are very worried about groundwater pollution. Back in the 1980s, when the legislature gave counties the authority and, in fact, the duty to take over solid waste management, we looked at all the options. And with karst geology, we thought we had better, first off, take over the Rochester's failing landfill. It turned out it was a Superfund site. So we've been cleaning that up. We have located a new landfill in the only township it can possibly fit because of geology, and luckily the township board wasn't opposed to that because there was no other place to put it, and we have built a waste-to-energy facility that was actually fairly popular because it's a way to deal with waste that isn't landfilling and creating water pollution. All of that was done in the 1980s. At some point, these facilities are going to need expansion. And we agree that local control is wonderful also, but we could be in a situation where there's only one place to expand our landfill and one township would deny it. And so we're quite concerned about the public investment that we have made if it could be tripped by something that easy.
Well, and thank you, and I would encourage both of you to work with the author and have an understanding of the bill, because for the most part, I think you're speaking to situations that aren't what the bill is about. So I understand your concerns, and I want to understand that it's my understanding you're going to be able to communicate with MPCA and work together on the issues. It's just a matter of who shows the signed permit first, whether or not. One more testifier, if you want to come forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I didn't get my name on the list. I'm Trudy Richter with the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, which is the local six counties that work with solid waste. I'm also the executive director of the Minnesota Resource Recovery Association, which represents all of the waste energy facilities around the state. And we, too, want to work on this when it's laid over. In particular, our experience to date has been that the MPCA will not start and work put any significant work at all into a permit if they're waiting for local approvals. And that's probably prudent, that they're spending taxpayers' dollars and staff time on something that they don't know is going to move forwards. The problem is it's not a concurrent situation, and therefore that information that's so critical to local governments as to the impact both in air quality, groundwater, et cetera, is not then going to be available. So we would like to at least make sure that if, as this is laid over and moves forward, that somehow the legislature directs the PCA to work concurrently so that we don't have that difficulty moving forwards on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rickard. Questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know to whom I should best direct this question, but I need clarification. I understand that the county then is responsible for the solid waste disposal.
Ms. Rickard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, according to state law since 1980, it's all solid waste planning in the state is done by the individual 87 counties.
Representative Johnson.
And thank you. And then, so if we did this, this would actually put, I'm thinking it's particularly the Olmsted County situation, that township could then stop the county from really making its best decision for the county?
Ms. Rickard.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I think to the extent that it could go to that, that township in that instance, if they needed to expand their landfill, could block an expansion, and with their karst geology, that may be the only place, in fact, they could be in that county.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a final comment. I think this is a little more complex than a simple local control issue that, especially in the case of Olmsted County, I don't think their options are many, and we've got to respect that, and they've got to take care of their geology, and there's a larger context here that needs to be applied. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Rickard. Representative Neuberger renews his motion that House File 668 be laid over. Any final comments, Representative Neuberger?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity, and I want to thank the testifiers for coming forth, and I will work with the folks that are have some questions and some concerns. I would like to see this go through. I do would like to say, though, there has been a fair amount of what I feel is disparaging undertones against township supervisors. Township supervisors are not stupid people. They're some of the smartest people I've ever met, and they work very hard and long hours, and they live in the communities that they serve, and the decisions that they make will always come back to bite them. These people are heroes in my estimation because of the work that they do. I know because I go to my township meetings and I sit there and I watch them agonize over the decisions that they have to make. So I just want to just put a plug out there to make sure that we're not just delegating township supervisors into some category of uneducated hicks, because they're not.
Thank
and
you,
with that, sir, I would like to move this to the possible inclusion.
And Representative Neuberger, please work with the different folks involved that have come forward, testified, and with the MPCA, so we have a clear understanding of what actually the bill does do, because there's certainly a misunderstanding in the implications of your bill. Thank you. Next, members, we're going to move to House File 1494. Representative Howe, your bill, there you are. If you want to come forward, that would be good. Good morning, Representative Howe.
Good morning,
Representative Howe. I'll move House File 1494 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Howe, you've got an A1 amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment discussion to the A1. Have members seen it? It's got five lines. All those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A1's adopted. Representative Howe, your bill is now in the shape that you would like it, if you want to speak to your amended bill for possible inclusion. Representative Howe, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1494 is a bill to bring the water appropriation process into a reasonable scope that we all can support. Currently, the statute requires a kind of guilty till proven innocent process. And it's been difficult for everyone involved to navigate this process. The Department of Natural Resources had tried to and give guidance to a process that they have not even been able to quite get their arms around. The current requirements changed from the original language. The original language required a potential impact. And a potential impact was identified as a zero impact by the Department of Natural Resources. And then in 2014, just last year, it was changed because we couldn't do much with the zero, the potential impact. It was a little bit onerous, so they changed it to a negative impact. And the DNR assigned a 15% to the negative impact. Well, and that, we found out, could vary dependent upon the circumstances that were there at the time. So it wasn't a hard, fast 15% impact. It was kind of a, at 15%, the red flag goes up, we'll adjust from there. The concern here is all the cost of the data collection and the monitoring is to be paid for by the person that's doing the water, that's applied for the water appropriation. And this is before we've even determined that there's an impact or a problem. The bill before you requires that a substantial negative impact exists, and it defines it as 25%. And it identifies that the DNR is the responsible agency to measure and document that impact.
So that's the basis of the bill. The bill is to put forth some guidance and some reasonable expectations for everyone to understand and know what's out there as we go forward to try and apply this measure to impacted water streams out there.
Thank you, Representative Howell. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Howell, I have some questions as on your bill is how the impacts on surface waters. If I see surface waters, this is both lake and streams, correct?
Representative Howell.
Correct. And really, Representative Johnson, that's really not where I'm Representative Fisher, sorry. That's really not where I'm going. Actually, where I'm really going at is that in the what brought this to light is a town of less than 5,000 people. This is an impact to their largest employer and their biggest taxpayer, the Cold Spring Brewery, Third Street Brew House.
We're going to hear from them in a minute. Representative Fisher, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've read a lot of the information in the documents here. The question I have is when it's coming to the surface waters, when we're talking about 25%, that also includes lakes. And when I take a look at our area, we've got an area where, you know, for our lake to go down 25%, which we seem to be starting to get close, is that by volume going by in a stream, or are you taking a look at a lake where a closed basin, does that mean 25% of the level or 25% of the from the top to the bottom of the lake, or is it 25% of the volume of the water in the lake?
Representative Fisher, I'm going to let DNR answer that. No, Representative Howell, I'm going to let DNR answer it because we're going to have...
thank you, because I wouldn't be able to answer that, and that's exactly where I was going to go.
Mr. Meckel will come down in a minute. Not yet, Mr. Meckel. Representative Fisher, Mr. Meckel will come down and give us the education necessary to understand what Representative Howe is talking about in the 25%. Any additional questions for Representative Howe? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Howe.
I'm sorry, Representative Fisher, were you done?
Well, I'll wait for I've got others, but I'll wait questions, but I want to wait.
They're not for Representative Howe? I'm sorry. If they are, go ahead. Representative Fisher.
Actually, probably more for the DNR.
Okay, thank you. Representative Uglum.
Representative Howell, you mentioned that I'm familiar with this trout stream and everything else. Did you mention all the good faith efforts that the city of Cold Spring's gone through in terms of how much money they've expended trying to meet this fuzzy target that the DNR has? I know that they've been drilling a lot of wells and trying to come up with some answer for this, but they haven't been able to do it. Is that correct?
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Uglum. Currently, the cost to the small city has been just shy of $200,000.
Representative Uglum.
They've drilled at least 10 wells. They have yet to find they have now just identified a few wells now that they're drilling to try and substantiate that they're going to have enough water from those wells. And they'll further have to pipe that. It hasn't been determined yet, I don't believe, whether they've got to put in a treatment plant to that, but that is going to be a serious impact to the tune of millions of dollars for a town of less than 4,000 people.
Just one, and Representative Uglum, we will hear from DNR on the implications and some of their potential thoughts on the process and from the brewery. Representative Uglum.
One quick follow-up, last one. Representative Howe, I know you live in the area, and these wells have existed at the city and at the brewery for a long, long period of time. Have you noticed any degrading effects on the stream?
Representative Howe.
No, in fact, and I apologize, I did take pictures of the stream. The stream is you know, and if I didn't include this, but there is for the Cold Spring Creek, there is a DNR study on that creek that was done in 2012. And it's kind of, it doesn't state anywhere in there as far as the impact. Nowhere in there does it imply that the water appropriations that are coming out of that aquifer, the groundwater, that it impacts that trout stream. It talks about the brush. It talks about the sand that comes in through the stormwater. It talks about the floods. It talks about the dry periods, but it doesn't talk about the brewery and their appropriation or the city whose wells also come out of that same aquifer. And no one's taking water out of the stream. It's all about the groundwater. It's all about the aquifer there.
and the stream is good. Now, Mr. Chair, if I could bring up the Third Street Brew House and the Cold Spring Brewery.
We're going to bring the two testifiers, if you want to come up together. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for the author of the bill and the amendment. So on the amendment 1.2, you deleted that can be proven and inserted as measured and verified by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. So that, what is that? Is that out there in the stream measuring height, or is it measuring stream flow volume, or is it measuring dead fish?
Representative Howell, I would, this technical question will be answered appropriately by Mr. Meckel.
I want to let he's the author of the amendment.
Okay.
Well,
Representative Hansen, I've had enough attack on people and testifiers about their expertise in issues. I have met with Mr. Meckel a number of times to understand this percentage issue, and I still don't understand it. And I don't know how much time Representative Howell has spent with him, but I know how much time I have spent, and I still don't understand it. I want people to act appropriately in this committee and ask appropriate questions, and that one was inappropriate. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I was asking the question of the author of the bill. We have the public here. They have a right to know as well. You've had a chance to talk with the author. I have not. You've had a chance to talk to the DNR. I have not, nor has anybody else on this. If you've given me an opportunity and given him an opportunity to answer, then if he said, well, I want the DNR down, that could have happened.
Representative Hansen, I have already said about three times Mr. Meckel is going to come down. And I wanted the brewery to testify first before Mr. Meckel. If you want me to set the brewery folks aside and let Mr. Meckel help Representative Howe answer your question about the surface water. Representative Fisher asked about how it worked in regards to surface water and what the percentage asked about. He asked that 5 or 10 minutes ago. I said Mr. Meckel will be coming down to answer those questions. You've asked a similar question now, knowing that Mr. Meckel was going to come down and answer it. I don't want personal attacks on people, no matter who they are, at this testifier table. You know how I operate. I'm straight up. Mr. Meckel's got a lot of good insight on this issue, and I wanted to let him go last so we could have the most possible time allowed for us to understand this issue. It's being laid over for possible inclusion. It's an extremely complex issue that this little stream is a good example of the issue before us and how it affects folks. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, it's not personal attacks to ask the question. I was asking the author of the amendment, and I'd be happy to talk with you after this.
Yeah. Thank you. Representative Howe, did you want to expand on the question?
I was going to say that currently I don't think anyone really understands what the current law says, and I was just trying to get it to where the DNR, who has the expertise, that has the knowledge, they can testify to it. Not only that, they are the ones that should be measuring and verifying it. And that's why I put the amendment in there. I believe that they are the experts. They can identify what an impact is and how it should be done.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record. Good timing.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Brent Neisinger. I'm the Director of Environmental Control at Cold Spring Brewing Company.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Doug DeGeest. I am the General Manager of Cold Spring Brewing Company, Third Street Brew House. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, gentlemen. Begin your testimony, if you would.
Well, Jeff has brought this forward. We are impacted by the current law that exists, and it's been a frustrating process for us. We've been working on our water appropriations for 5 years, and as you know, and I have heard, it is a very confusing, a little ambiguous process for us, and we just want to make sure that all the issues are understood and so we can make clear financial decisions for our company.
Mr. DeGeest, if I could ask you, do you want the DNR will speak to some of the how you guys are trying to work together to find a solution, if I'm not mistaken. Just yesterday I met with Mr. Meckel, and I believe it was yesterday or the day before, And there's some new efforts by you and the city to potentially look to get a little farther away from the stream and see if the nitrates are low enough to where you can treat the water to be able to use it. Mr. Neisinger, if you want to address that, if you would, and if it's stuff that you'd like Mr. Meckel to come down and speak to first, but why don't you go ahead? I'd like to hear what you have to say, and then I wanted to let Mr. Meckel address it.
Mr. Chair, committee, to date, Jeff spoke to this. The city has drilled roughly 15 wells to date in various areas of exploration around the city, to include in other towns, in such as Waite Park and Rockville and Richmond. The hard expense, which is legal fees, engineering, drilling, and testing, is just under $200,000, plus employee time and other resources that have been used for the brewery since 2009, when I began this process. The brewery was issued a limited permit due to the relationship of the groundwater to a surface water, and in the definition of a limited permit, we had X amount of time to basically show zero impact at the time, and there are varying degrees of what that impact was. One letter we received from the DNR said that our permits would revert back to their original issuance, which was still an allocation. And then some time had passed, and we were looking to figure out how, as a privately owned company, we were going to make up that balance of water. Being right in the heart of the city, it was very difficult and costly for us to find our own exploration areas, pipe our own water in to our facility. So we started researching that, and then later we received a letter from the DNR that stated at the end of the permit, zero allocation would be the number that was allowed. So we began working, continued working with the DNR to try to define what the statute how it changed in 2010 and how that effect was. And then we were told the distance from the trout stream had to be anything over 5 miles had to be reviewed. And then over the course of the last roughly 4 years, it's come, or two, 3 years, it's come down to a mile and a half. And now I have nothing in writing to date that says roughly 15% would be the allowable impact. And it's not defined. So we started working towards getting our extension with Mr. Steve Hirsch from the DNR. So we had to prove to the DNR that we are making good conscious efforts to try to get this solved, and we want to be a good steward to the community and the environment. So we worked and we built a draft progress report, which shows every area of exploration that the city and the brewery have undergone and the costs and the implications of each of them. And we did get the extension. The DNR was gracious enough to give us that extension until December 31st of 2017 to do that full exploration and to find an adequate water source.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Neisinger. And your testimony that you just gave is exactly why I wanted you to testify before Mr. Meckel comes forward. I wanted folks to know that this has been an extremely tough issue. You need to refer to Representative Howe as Representative Howe instead of Jeff. But I will tell you that when people in your own district call you by your first name, which happens to me all the time at home, that means you're doing your work with your constituents and they know you and feel comfortable talking to you. But unfortunately, in this formal setting, it's Representative Howe today, and it can change when you go out in the hallway. But thank you for your testimony, and this is an extremely tough issue. And folks need to understand, Mr. Meckel, you can come forward, unless there is a question for what the testifier, at least two of them. I see hands going up. This is a tough issue, members. This is a small trout stream, a very small trout stream, and current law, we're supposed to protect those trout streams. And I understand the challenges. You've got over 100 employees. You've got 401K. We chatted this morning. You got insurance for them and insurance for their family members. You're a family-owned business. And this is a challenge and a tough thing. But in state law, we're required to protect these trout streams. and that's the reality, and it's frustrating. DNR is trying to work on a plan to allow some flexibility, and that's the challenge before us. Representative Fisher, you have a question for the testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I just wanted to confirm a couple of things as I was reading through the other documents that were handed out on this. I just wanted to verify with our testifiers as to what is the total amount for the appropriation or permitting that they have or that they're looking for per year.
Mr. Neisinger, can you tell us what your appropriation is for the last few years?
Mr. Chair, member, our appropriation for last year with the limited permit was $145 million for that permit.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then one last question I had, and I want to make sure I understood it right, is it sounded like one of the things that was impacting your ability for finding water as you're looking elsewhere was nitrates that might be in the water. Was I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Neisinger.
Mr. Chair, committee member, yes, that is a big issue in our area is the nitrate levels.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Representative Howell.
Well, can I add?
Please.
For the brewery, it's not an issue for the high nitrate water. In fact, they have taken over, they have leased the well from the city well number 3, because the city cannot use it. I believe it's, is it one? Oh, it's city well number 1 they lease, because it does have high nitrates, and the city cannot use it. The brewery can use it because they go through a reverse osmosis system. The high nitrate water flows just west of the city wells. The concern is if the brewery stops using the high nitrate water, the Department of Health is concerned that that high nitrate water that goes just west of the city wells will then go into the city wells, and we'll need a treatment plant for the city, because then that shuts down the city wells. And that's where that high nitrate water comes in.
You're beginning to understand, Representative Fisher, this is a real easy and simple issue.
Yeah. No, I understand. No. Anytime we get into water, deep into water.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to ask the questions here, because it's helping with my understanding as we're going through it. So what I'm understanding then from what you've explained, would I be correct to summarize it by saying that with what the brewery is doing with the wells right now that they're using from the city, they've got the high nitrates, they're preventing the high nitrate water from flowing further into the other city wells. So in other words, it's like helping prevent the pollution from moving out, correct?
Representative Howell.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Representative Fisher, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, I have some sympathy for your issue, because the quantity and the quality are intersecting here, and it's a challenge that's happening in many cities where there's costs that are coming as quality and quantity intersect. And in sandy areas, you've got your you think you've got water because it's shallow groundwater, but that's not the water you can use. And so I have a question, Mr. Chair, if the Department of Health has designated any wellhead protection areas. Have there been areas that, I know we have a program that's long standing there to try to protect the recharge areas where the water comes in. Have they talked with you about that? I mean, that might be outside of even close proximity, to try to deal with where water flows into the aquifers that you are tapping into.
Mr. Neisinger.
Mr. Chair.
Are you okay with where the scope of that is, or do you need to call a friend?
No. Mr. Chair, Representative, the city has worked extensively for many, many, many years with the Department of Health on their wellhead protection program. They do agricultural initiatives with the farmers for slow-release nitrogen. The city actually pays a portion within their DWISMA for that slow-release fertilizer. They pay a portion of that. They also own big chunks of land around their well field to control that use. So extensive work. They do on the north side of town, up addition called North Point, they do area meetings up there every year where they do bounce houses and hot dogs and stuff to get the people interested in. It's a beautiful housing development with beautiful green grass, and trying to educate those people as well. So education with the nitrate has been huge in Cold Spring.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, how far away is the wellhead protection area?
Mr. Neisinger.
Mr. Chair, I believe it goes 3 miles north of town. It has changed in the last couple of years as hydrogeologists are understanding the area and more wells are going in the northern reaches of our area. So the Duisma has changed slightly.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
And maybe, Mr. Chair, when we get the agencies, I don't know if Bowser is here with the Wellhead Protection Program, or we can have them get some information and just see if there's additional, you know, if there's mapped areas that have not come into the program or other things that could be done to try to prevent that contamination.
And if we don't get to that, the bill's being laid over, we'll get that information from Bowser and get it sent out to the committee, and then also confirm the Wellhead Protection Area with Department of Health, and we'll get those maps to the committee. Mr. Meckle, do you want to come forward? I think you've heard plenty of background here for the last 20 minutes, so if you could walk through kind of where this is and what's going on and what's happening. Maybe a little bit of information, Mr. Meckle, about what kind of stream we're talking about here and the such. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Jason Meckle, Department of Natural Resources, Section Manager in the Division of Ecological and Water Resources. I think you've built up the expectations for my ability to explain a complicated situation, Mr. Chair, but I'll do my best. I want to talk more broadly about the bill language and how and why we don't support the language as drafted. There's several problems that the language as it's drafted presents to us. One is, it says, as measured and verified by the DNR commissioner. We don't have the resources to measure and verify stream flow and water levels all around the state. I've testified in previous years that we don't have the monitoring wells adequate to assess our water supply in our appropriation permit program the way we need to. We have a very limited, frankly, number of stream stations. Now, we have installed 2 stream flow stations on Cold Spring Creek. To get a better handle on that, we were able to do that because of some the general fund budget increase that we have, but we don't have enough to do this everywhere. The other issue that I wanted to speak to about this particular language is that it says substantial, and the dictionary definition of substantial says concerning the essentials of something of considerable importance. The statutes say that the DNR can only issue permits if it does not harm ecosystems. If we allow substantial negative impacts, we've then harmed ecosystems. They're of considerable importance. Statutes also say that we must safeguard water sustainability for in-stream uses. So the 25% goes well beyond what the established science says is a sustainable level of impact to a stream. The way the language is written, it's not clear as to how we would apply that 25%, when we would apply it, what time of year. We have been working on, in our groundwater management areas, in drafting some language in those places where the water use is high, that we think a 15% of the low flow during a period of year is a reasonable standard that we can start with and adjust from there if necessary based on local conditions. This 25% for streams is a significant amount of flow. You take a stream like Cold Spring Brewery, Cold Spring Creek, excuse me. We've measured the flow in that stream. It's about 2 cubic feet per second. It's about yay wide. The appropriations in that area, we've estimated, are already pulling as much as 1 cubic feet a second, cubic foot per second away from the stream, flow that otherwise would be in the stream. So the difficulty that we have of groundwater appropriations versus surface water appropriations is that in a surface water appropriation, if you put a pipe into that body of water and you pump out 500 gallons per minute, you've had 500 gallons per minute impact right there in that stream, and you could, in fact, measure that. The problem that we have with groundwater appropriations is that when we put a pipe vertically into the ground and we start pumping, we're pulling water into that, it creates a cone. A very large cone. This becomes a distributed effect when it actually reaches the stream. I can't go into the stream in one location and now measure the impact of those cones of multiple various pumping scenarios impacting the flow and say it's this one and it's this one and it's this portion. So the difficulty we're going to have is actually measuring it. What we have to use is basic hydrogeologic models that have been around for decades that the USGS has developed to get at what is the actual diversion expected, the amount of flow that we've diverted from the creek. That's what we've been applying in this case and in several other cases. Based on the local hydrogeology, on the aquifer tests that were completed as part of the city's production well, they'd measured the characteristics that we need to do these calculations. So as this statute is written, I don't think we can do this. And I think it presents some real challenges for us when it comes to protecting surface water resources.
You're done, Mr. Meckel, for now?
Mr. Chair, those were some of the questions that I think I was trying to speak to. There may have been others I was trying to write down the various issues, so I can answer questions if clarification.
And Manager Meckel, I think it was good for folks to get the context of the stream. This is a, in all respects, a little bitty stream, but it's one that's a designated trout stream in our state, and trout streams in law have some really significant protection that are in law, and that's the challenge. And I commend you and the department for working with Representative Howe, who's been diligent in his efforts to help the brewery. I think the commitment from the brewery with the grasp of knowledge from their environmental person, who I never met until I saw this morning here, is impressive. They have 100-some employees. I think DNR recognizes the importance of the brewery and is being flexible and giving them a couple years to try and find some wells. And it's interesting that they can use this higher nitrate water, which, to Representative Fisher's point, is a good deal because, if I'm not mistaken, I learned this yesterday, nitrates actually make beer better. But we probably have to be careful. We don't put too many of them in it. We don't want beer to taste too good. And when our little babies drink it, maybe that would be bad. I don't know. And we could have a whole discussion on what happens if the mother drinks the beer and then when she's nursing the baby, and maybe the grasp of knowledge from their environmentalist, he probably knows the answer to that, but we can't go there today. Thank you, Mr. Meckel. I've got Representative Fabian. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Meckel, for being here to try to shed some light on a very complex situation. And I just have a couple of questions. You talked about the U.S. Geological Society, I believe, and they have hydrogeologic models that have been around for decades. Have those models been revised using today's technology?
Mr. Meckel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, the U.S. Geological Survey established some models decades ago, and yes, in fact, new variations on those models to deal with additional understanding of complexity and places where the aquifers aren't as simple as might in some cases be are in play, and those are the various models. We use the best model to fit the situation.
Representative Howe, comment to that.
Thank you. The hydrologists that the city hired say that the program and the models that the DNR are using are antiquated and that no one uses those anymore but the DNR. The hydrologists believe that that's antiquated modeling that the DNR is using, and they don't even use those models any longer.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to that point then, Mr. Chair, could we get some sort of testimony in the future from some current hydrologists around the state who are involved in this for a living, that they could give us some clarity on that?
We will do that as the need arises.
Thank you.
Manager Meckel, any comments on Representative Howe's comment?
Mr. Chair, I'm very confident that our hydrogeologists are using the best available technology. We regularly invest in their training. We send them to the top modeling training programs in the country. We coordinate with the other agencies and the U.S. Geological Survey in peer review of our approaches. I'm very confident that we're using the best available for the state of Minnesota.
And thank you, Manager Meckel. And Representative Howe, one thing I'm big on is let's agree on the facts, and then if you can't agree on the facts, we'll come back here. But I'll give you, the environmental manager at the brewery and the city, an opportunity to, not now, to figure out what the facts are. And if we actually have a discrepancy between your hydrologist and Mr. Meckel's hydrologist, we'll have that discussion. But if you actually agree on the facts, then we don't need to have that discussion, because the facts are the facts. Representative Fisher, I know you had a number of questions, and so now you get your chance. We have four more minutes.
Yes, you're
you're the only one on the list, so fire away.
First thing that I'm a little confused on is you're talking about stream flow as cubic feet, and I'm sorry, I'm thinking gallons per minute type of thing. Can you kind of convert that for me to give me a little bit better idea? Because it, you know, I'm thinking one wheelhouse and the other, and I just can't convert that in my mind.
Mr. Chairman,
Manager Meckel.
Representative Fisher, memory is a little fuzzy for me, but I think it's in the neighborhood of about 450 gallons per minute is a cubic foot per second.
Representative Fisher.
Okay, so 450 per cubic. So the stream flow in that area at low flow would be about 900 gallons per minute then, approximately?
Manager Meckel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, I'd like to verify the numbers, but it's in the ballpark.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fisher.
Mr. Meckel, one of the questions I have, and I first of all, I want to mention I'm concerned about the bill because it is so large, but there's a couple things that have been mentioned through here that I'm intrigued by the fact that part of the reason they're using one of the wells is because it's helping keep the nitrates from going further out and contaminating other wells. Is that one well that they're currently using then within that area that would have an influence on the stream, in your opinion?
Manager Meckel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, yeah, the wells that the brewery uses are all within about 500 feet, maybe 550 feet of the stream. It's very close to the stream. If they were a lot farther away, the impact would be much, much less.
And Representative Fisher, just Manager Meckel, maybe you should expand. You're working with the environmentalists from the brewery, as mentioned, and you're working with the city and the brewery on looking farther away from the river and trying to find if there is a sweet spot with lower nitrates, and yet we would have the ability to maybe bring water away from that wouldn't impact the stream and would fulfill the needs. You mentioned that to me yesterday, and I kind of alluded people that you're in confirmation with the brewery and the city that you're working together to try to see if there is a sweet spot out there?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have been working very closely with the brewery and the city and the other agencies involved because of the water quality concerns and trying to find the best possible solution that provides an adequate long-term water supply but also protects the creek.
Representative Fisher.
You know, I think what I may do is follow up with them because I see that we're coming up on 10 o'clock here and maybe do some of this offline with the folks.
Thank you. And Representative Fisher, I would strongly encourage that because, members, this little stream and the way it's been dealt with serves as an example of some of the challenges throughout the state. And I can look at this from a half-full, half-empty scenario of the glass and come to different conclusions. And the reality is it's an 8-ounce glass with 4 ounces in it, and so we're going to find a solution that works. Representative Howe, if you want to make some final closing comments, we're going to be laying your bill over, and you need to go to work and keep working with the department and the good people, and keep working.
Well, I will say it's been frustrating because I met with the DNR about 8 weeks ago and was guaranteed I was going to get data within the next week. I met him in the hall 3 weeks later, guaranteed I was going to get the data from the stream. I'm still waiting to hear that, see that data. So that's the frustration that I think the brewery, the city, and myself has dealt with some of this, trying to get to conclusion. But this trout stream, at one time, had 500 trout in it. Because of fish kills, with no effect of the brewery, it got down to 12 trout in 2009. It currently, in 2012 they did a study, it had 92 trout stream. This is while the brewery has taken as much water as they ever have out of the groundwater, and the trout are coming back gangbusters. So, you know, we need to really further evaluate exactly what does affect the trout stream and what is that level.
And at that, I appreciate hearing the bill, and thank you, members.
Members, House File 1494 is laid over. Members, tomorrow we have Representative Fabian's bill that deals with the Citizens Board. I anticipate there's a good chance that we could be coming back tomorrow evening, depending on testimony and time and all that. It's another complex issue that will take a while. Members, we're adjourned.
There is for the Cold Spring Creek, there is a DNR study on that creek that was done in 2012. And it's kind of, it doesn't state anywhere in there as far as the impacts. Nowhere in there does it imply that the water appropriations that are coming out of that aquifer, the groundwater, that it impacts that trout stream. It talks about the brush. It talks about the sand that comes in through the stormwater. It talks about the floods. It talks about the dry periods, but it doesn't talk about the brewery and their appropriation or the city whose wells also come out of that same aquifer. And no one's taken water out of the stream. It's all about the groundwater. It's all about the aquifer there. And the stream is good. Now, Mr. Chair, if I could bring up the Third Street Brew House and the Cold Spring Brewery.
We're going to bring the two testifiers, if you want to come up together. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for the author of the bill and the amendment. So on the amendment 1.2, you deleted that can be proven and inserted as measured and verified by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. So that... what is that? Is that out there in the stream measuring height, or is it measuring stream flow volume, or is it measuring dead fish?
Representative Howell, this technical question will be answered appropriately by Mr. Meckel.
Hey, he's the author of the amendment.
Okay. Well, Representative Hansen, I've had enough attack on people and testifiers about their expertise in issues. I have met with Mr. Meckel a number of times to understand this percentage issue, and I still don't understand it. And I don't know how much time Representative Howe has spent with him, but I know how much time I have spent, and I still don't understand it. I want people to act appropriately in this committee and ask appropriate questions, and that one was inappropriate. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I was asking the question of the author of the bill. We have the public here. They have a right to know as well. You've had a chance to talk with the author. I have not. You've had a chance to talk to the DNR. I have not, nor has anybody else on this. If you've given me an opportunity and given him an opportunity to answer, then if he said, well, I want the DNR down, that could have happened.
Representative Hansen, I have already said about three times Mr. Meckel is going to come down. And I wanted the brewery to testify first before Mr. Meckel. If you want me to set the brewery folks aside and let Mr. Meckel help Representative Howe answer your question about the surface water. Representative Fisher asked about how it worked in regards to surface water and what the percentage asked about. He asked that 5 or 10 minutes ago. I said Mr. Meckel will be coming down to answer those questions. You've asked a similar question now, knowing that Mr. Meckel was going to come down and answer it. I don't want personal attacks on people, no matter who they are, at this testifier table. You know how I operate. I'm straight up. Mr. Meckel's got a lot of good insight on this issue, and I wanted to let him go last so we could have the most possible time allowed for us to understand this issue. It's being laid over for possible inclusion. It's an extremely complex issue that this little stream is a good example of the issue before us and how it affects folks. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, it's not personal attacks to ask the question. I was asking the author of the amendment, and I'd be happy to talk with you after this.
Thank you. Representative Howe, did you want to expand on the question?
I was going to say that currently I don't think anyone really understands what the current law says, and I was just trying to get it to where the DNR, who has the expertise, that has the knowledge, they can testify to it. Not only that, they are the ones that should be measuring and verifying it. And that's why I put the amendment in there. I believe that they are the experts. They can identify what an impact is and how it should be done.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record. Good timing.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Brent Neisinger. I'm the Director of Environmental Control at Cold Spring Brewing Company.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Doug DeGeest. I am the General Manager of Cold Spring Brewing Company, 3rd Street Brew House. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, gentlemen. Begin your testimony, if you would.
Well, Jeff has brought this forward. We are impacted by the current law that exists, and it's been a frustrating process for us. We've been working on our water appropriations for 5 years, and as you know, and I have heard, it is a very confusing, a little ambiguous process for us, and we just want to make sure that all the issues are understood and so we can make clear financial decisions for our company.
Mr. DeGeest, if I could ask you, do you want the DNR will speak to some of the how you guys are trying to work together to find a solution, if I'm not mistaken. Just yesterday I met with Mr. Meckel, and I believe it was yesterday or the day before, and there's some new efforts by you and the city to potentially look to get a little farther away from the stream and see if the nitrates are low enough to where you can treat the water to be able to use it. Mr. Neisinger, if you want to address that, if you would, and if it's stuff that you'd like Mr. Meckel to come down and speak to first, but why don't you go ahead? I'd like to hear what you have to say, and then I wanted to let Mr. Meckel address it.
Mr. Chair, committee, to date, Jeff spoke to this. The city has drilled roughly 15 wells to date in various areas of exploration around the city, to include in other towns, in such as Waite Park and Rockville and Richmond. The expense, the hard expense, which is legal fees, engineering, drilling, and testing, is just under $200,000, plus employee time and other resources that have been used for the brewery since 2009 when I began this process. The brewery was issued a limited permit due to the relationship of the groundwater to a surface water, and in the definition of a limited permit, we had X amount of time to basically show zero impact at the time, and there are varying degrees of what that impact was. One letter we received from the DNR said that our permits would revert back to their original issuance, which was still an allocation. And then some time had passed, and we were looking to figure out how, as a privately owned company, we were going to make up that balance of water. Being right in the heart of the city, it was very difficult and costly for us to find our own exploration areas, pipe our own water in to our facility. So we started researching that, and then later we received a letter from the DNR that stated at the end of the permit, zero allocation would be the number that was allowed. So we began working, continued working with the DNR to try to define what the statute, how it changed in 2010 and how that effect was. And then we were told the distance from the trout stream had to be anything over 5 miles had to be reviewed. And then over the course of the last roughly 4 years, it's come, or two, 3 years, it's come down to 1.5 miles. And now I have nothing in writing to date that says roughly 15% would be the allowable impact. And it's not defined. So we started working towards getting our extension with Mr. Steve Hirsch from the DNR. So we had to prove to the DNR that we are making good conscious efforts to try to get this solved, and we want to be a good steward to the community and the environment. So we worked and we built a draft progress report, which shows every area of exploration that the city and the brewery have undergone and the costs and the implications of each of them. And we did get the extension. The DNR was gracious enough to give us that extension until December 31st of 2017 to do that full exploration and to find an adequate water source.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Neisinger. And your testimony that you just gave is exactly why I wanted you to testify before Mr. Meckel comes forward. I wanted folks to know that this has been an extremely tough issue. You need to refer to Representative Howe as Representative Howe instead of Jeff. But I will tell you that when people in your own district call you by your first name, which happens to me all the time at home, that means you're doing your work with your constituents and they know you and feel comfortable talking to you. But unfortunately, in this formal setting, it's Representative Howe today, and it can change when you go out in the hallway. But thank you for your testimony, and this is an extremely tough issue. And folks need to understand, Mr. Meckel, you can come forward. There is a question for what the testifier, at least two of them, I see hands going up. This is a tough issue, members. This is a small trout stream, a very small trout stream, and current law, we're supposed to protect those trout streams. And I understand the challenges. You've got over 100 employees, you've got 401k, we chatted this morning, you got insurance for them and insurance for their family members, you're a family-owned business, and this is a challenge and a tough thing. But in state law, we're required to protect these trout streams. And that's the reality, and it's frustrating. DNR is trying to work on a plan to allow some flexibility, and that's the challenge before us. Representative Fisher, you have a question for the testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I just want to confirm a couple of things as I was reading through the other documents that were handed out on this. I just wanted to verify with our testifiers as to what is the total amount for the appropriation or permitting that they have or that they're looking for per year.
Mr. Neisinger, can you tell us what your appropriation is for the last few years?
Mr. Chair, member, our appropriation for last year with the limited permit was $145 million for that permit.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then one last question I had, and I want to make sure I understood it right, is it sounded like one of the things that was impacting your ability for finding water as you're looking elsewhere was nitrates that might be in the water. Was I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Neisinger.
Mr. Chair, committee member, yes, that is a big issue in our area is the nitrate levels.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Representative Howell.
Well, can I add?
Please.
For the brewery, it's not an issue for the high nitrate water. In fact, they have taken over, they have leased a well from the city well number 3, because the city cannot use it. I believe it's sitting up, is it one? Oh, it's city well number 1 they lease, because it does have high nitrates, and the city cannot use it. The brewery can use it because they go through a reverse osmosis system. The high nitrate water flows just west of the city wells. The concern is if the brewery stops using the high nitrate water, the Department of Health is concerned that that high nitrate water that goes just west of the city wells will then go into the city wells, and we'll need a treatment plant for the city, because then that shuts down the city wells. And that's where that high nitrate water comes in.
You're beginning to understand, Representative Fisher, this is a real easy and simple issue.
No, I understand. No. Anytime we get into water, deep into water.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to ask the questions here, because it's helping with my understanding as we're going through it. So what I'm understanding then from what you've explained, would I be correct to summarize it by saying that with what the brewery is doing with the wells right now that they're using from the city, they've got the high nitrates, they're preventing the high nitrate water from flowing further into the other city wells. So in other words, it's like helping prevent the pollution from moving out, correct?
Representative Howe.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Representative Fisher, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, I have some sympathy for your issue, because the quantity and the quality are intersecting here, and it's a challenge that's happening in many cities where there's costs that are coming as quality and quantity intersect. And in sandy areas, you've got your you think you've got water because it's shallow groundwater, but that's not the water you can use. And so, I have a question, Mr. Chair, if the Department of Health has designated any wellhead protection areas. Have there been areas that, I know we have a program that's long standing there to try to protect the recharge areas where the water comes in. Have they talked with you about that? That might be outside of even close proximity to try to deal with where water flows into the aquifers that you are tapping into.
Mr. Neisinger.
Mr. Chair.
Are you okay with where the scope of that is, or do you need to call a friend?
Nope. Mr. Chair, Representative, the city has worked extensively for many, many, many years with the Department of Health on their wellhead protection program. They do agricultural initiatives with the farmers for slow-release nitrogen. The city actually pays a portion within their DWISMA for that slow-release fertilizer. They pay a portion of that. They also own big chunks of land around their well field to control that use. So extensive work. They do on the north side of town up addition called North Point. They do area meetings up there every year where they do bounce houses and hot dogs and stuff to get the people interested in. It's a big, a beautiful housing development with beautiful green grass and trying to educate those people as well. So education with the nitrate has been huge in Cold Spring.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, how far away is the wellhead protection area?
Mr. Neisinger.
Mr. Chair, I believe it goes 3 miles north of town. It has changed in the last couple of years as hydrogeologists are understanding the area and more wells are going in the northern reaches of our area. So the DWISMA has changed slightly.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
And maybe, Mr. Chair, when we get to the agencies, I don't know if Bowser is here with the Wellhead Protection Program, or we can have them get some information and just see if there's additional, you know, if there's mapped areas that have not come into the program or other things that could be done to try to prevent that contamination.
And if we don't get to that, the bill's being laid over, we'll get that information from Bowser and get it sent out to the committee, and then also confirm the wellhead protection area with Department of Health, and we'll get those maps to the committee. Mr. Meckle, do you want to come forward? I think you've heard plenty of background here for the last 20 minutes, so if you could walk through kind of where this is and what's going on and what's happening, maybe a little bit of information, Mr. Meckle, about what kind of stream we're talking about here and the such. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Jason Meckle, Department of Natural Resources, Section Manager in the Division of Ecological and Water Resources. I think you've built up the expectations for my ability to explain a complicated situation, Mr. Chair, but I'll do my best. I want to talk more broadly about the bill language and how and why we don't support the language as drafted. There's several problems that the language as it's drafted presents to us. One is, it says, as measured and verified by the DNR commissioner. We don't have the resources to measure and verify stream flow and water levels all around the state. I've testified in previous years that we don't have the monitoring wells adequate to assess our water supply and our appropriation permit program the way we need to. We have a very limited, frankly, number of streams stations. Now, we have installed two stream flow stations on Cold Spring Creek. To get a better handle on that, we were able to do that because of some the general fund budget increase that we have, but we don't have enough to do this everywhere. The other issue that I wanted to speak to about this particular language is that it says substantial, and the dictionary definition of substantial says concerning the essentials of something of considerable importance. The statutes say that the DNR can only issue permits if it does not harm ecosystems. If we allow substantial negative impacts, we've then harmed ecosystems. They're of considerable importance. Statutes also say that we must safeguard water sustainability for in-stream uses. So the 25% goes well beyond what the established science says is a sustainable level of impact to a stream. The way the language is written, it's not clear as to how we would apply the 25%, when we would apply it, what time of year. We have been working on, in our groundwater management areas, in drafting some language in those places where the water use is high, that we think a 15% of the low flow during a period of year is a reasonable standard that we can start with and adjust from there if necessary based on local conditions. This 25% for streams is a significant amount of flow. You take a stream like Cold Spring Brewery, Cold Spring Creek, excuse me. We've measured the flow in that stream. It's about 2 cubic feet per second. about yay wide. The appropriations in that area, we've estimated, are already pulling as much as 1 cubic feet a second, cubic foot per second, away from the stream, flow that otherwise would be in the stream. So the difficulty that we have of groundwater appropriations versus surface water appropriations is that in a surface water appropriation, if you put a pipe into that body of water and you pump out 500 gallons per minute, you've had 500 gallons per minute impact right there in that stream, and you could, in fact, measure that. The problem that we have with groundwater appropriations is that when we put a pipe vertically into the ground and we start pumping, we're pulling water into that, it creates a cone, a very large cone. This becomes a distributed effect when it actually reaches the stream. I can't go into the stream in one location and now measure the impact of those cones of multiple various pumping scenarios impacting the flow and say it's this one and it's this one and it's this portion. So the difficulty we're going to have is actually measuring it. What we have to use is basic hydrogeologic models that have been around for decades that the USGS has developed to get at what is the actual diversion expected, the amount of flow that we've diverted from the creek. That's what we've been applying in this case and in several other cases. Based on the local hydrogeology, on the aquifer tests that were completed as part of the city's production well, they measured the characteristics that we need to do these calculations. So as this statute is written, I don't think we can do this. And I think it presents some real challenges for us when it comes to protecting surface water resources.
You're done, Mr. Meckel, for now?
Mr. Chair, those were some of the questions that I think I was trying to speak to. There may have been others I was trying to write down the various issues, so I can answer questions if clarification.
And Manager Meckel, I think it was good for folks to get the context of the stream. This is a, in all respects, a little bitty stream, but it's one that's a designated trout stream in our state, and trout streams in law have some really significant protection that are in law, and that's the challenge. And I commend you and the department for working with Representative Howe, who has been diligent in his efforts to help the brewery. I think the commitment from the brewery with the grasp of knowledge from their environmental person, who I never met until I saw this morning here, is impressive. They have 100-some employees. I think DNR recognizes the importance of the brewery and is being flexible in giving them a couple years to try and find some wells. And it's interesting that they can use this higher nitrate water, which, to Representative Fisher's point, is a good deal because, if I'm not mistaken, I learned this yesterday, nitrates actually make beer better. But we probably have to be careful. We don't put too many of them in it. We don't want beer to taste too good. And when our little babies drink it, maybe that would be bad. I don't know. And we could have a whole discussion on what happens if the mother drinks the beer and then when she's nursing the baby, and maybe the grasp of knowledge from their environmentalist, he probably knows the answer to that, but we can't go there today. Thank you, Mr. Meckel. I've got Representative Fabian. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Meckel, for being here to try to shed some light on a very complex situation. And I just have a couple of questions. You talked about the U.S. Geological Society, I believe, and they have hydrogeologic models that have been around for decades. Have those models been revised? Using today's technology.
Mr. Meckel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, the U.S. Geological Survey established some models decades ago, and yes, in fact, new variations on those models to deal with additional understanding of complexity and places where the aquifers aren't as simple as might in some cases be are in play, and those are the various models. We use the best model to fit the situation.
Representative Howe, comment to that.
Thank you. The hydrologists that the city hired say that the program and the models that the DNR are using are antiquated and that no one uses those anymore but the DNR. The hydrologists believe that that's antiquated
modeling that the DNR is using, and they don't even use that those models any longer.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to that point then, Mr. Chair, could we get some sort of testimony in the future from some current hydrologists around the state who are involved in this for a living, that they could give us some clarity on that?
We will do that as the need arises.
Thank you.
Manager Meckel, any comments on Representative Howe's comment?
Mr. Chair, I'm very confident that our hydrogeologists are using the best available technology. We regularly invest in their training. We send them to the top modeling training programs in the country. We coordinate with the other agencies and the U.S. Geological Survey and peer review of our approaches. I'm very confident that we're using the best available for the state of Minnesota.
And thank you, Manager Meckel. And Representative Howe, one thing I'm big on is let's agree on the facts, and then if you can't agree on the facts, we'll come back here. But I'll give you, the environmental manager at the brewery and the city, an opportunity to, not now, to figure out what the facts are, and if we actually have a discrepancy between your hydrologist and Mr. Meckel's hydrologist, we'll have that discussion. But if you actually agree on the facts, then we don't need to have that discussion, because the facts are the facts. Representative Fisher, I know you had a number of questions, and so now you get your chance. We have four more minutes.
Yes, you're I see that
you're the only one on the list, so fire away.
First thing that I'm a little confused on is you're talking about stream flow as cubic feet, and I'm sorry, I'm thinking gallons per minute type of thing. Can you kind of convert that for me to give me a little bit better idea? Because it, you know, I'm thinking one wheelhouse and the other, and I just can't convert that in my mind.
Mr. Chair,
Manager Meckel,
Representative Fisher, memory is a little fuzzy for me, but I think it's in the neighborhood of about 450 gallons per minute is a cubic foot per second.
Representative Fisher.
Okay, so 450 per cubic. So the stream flow in that area at low flow would be about 900 gallons per minute then, approximately?
Manager Meckel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, I'd like to verify the numbers, but it's in the ballpark.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fisher.
Mr. Meckel, one of the questions I have, and I first of all, I want to mention I'm concerned about the bill because it is so large, but there's a couple things that have been mentioned through here that I'm intrigued by the fact that part of the reason they're using one of the wells is because it's helping keep the nitrates from going further out and contaminating other wells. Is that one well that they're currently using then within that area that would have an influence on the stream, in your opinion?
Manager Meckel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, yeah, the wells that the brewery uses are all within about 500 feet, maybe 550 feet of the stream. It's very close to the stream. If they were a lot farther away, the impact would be much, much less.
And Representative Fisher, just Manager Meckel, maybe you should expand. You're working with the environmentalists from the brewery, as mentioned, and you're working with the city and the brewery on looking farther away from the river and trying to find if there is a sweet spot with lower nitrates, and yet we would have the ability to maybe bring water away from that wouldn't impact the stream and would fulfill the needs. You mentioned that to me yesterday, and I kind of alluded people that you're in confirmation with the brewery and the city that you're working together to try to see if there is a sweet spot out there.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have been working very closely with the brewery and the city and the other agencies involved because of the water quality concerns and trying to find the best possible solution that provides an adequate long-term water supply but also protects the creek.
Representative Fisher.
You know, I think what I may do is follow up with them because I see that we're coming up on 10 o'clock here and maybe do some of this offline with the folks.
Thank you. And Representative Fisher, I would strongly encourage that because, members, this little stream and the way it's been dealt with serves as an example of some of the challenges throughout the state. And I can look at this from a half-full, half-empty scenario of the glass and come to different conclusions. And the reality is it's an 8-ounce glass with 4 ounces in it, and so we're going to find a solution that works. Representative Howe, if you want to make some final closing comments, we're going to be laying your bill over, and you need to go to work and keep working with the department and the good people, and keep working.
Well, I will say it's been frustrating because I met with the DNR about 8 weeks ago and was guaranteed I was going to get data within the next week. I met them in the hall 3 weeks later, guaranteed I was going to get the data from the stream. I'm still waiting to hear that, see that data. So that's the frustration that I think the brewery, the city, and myself has dealt with some of this, trying to get to conclusion. But this trout stream, at one time, had 500 trout in it. Because of fish kills, with no effect of the brewery, it got down to 12 trout in 2009. It currently, well, in 2012, they did a study. It had 92 trout stream. This is while the brewery has taken as much water as they ever have out of this, out of the groundwater, and the trout are coming back gangbusters. So, you know, we need to really further evaluate exactly what does affect the trout stream and what is that level. And at that, I appreciate hearing the bill, and thank you, members.
Members, House File 1494 is laid over. Members, tomorrow we have Representative Fabian's bill that deals with the Citizens Board. I anticipate there's a good chance that we could be coming back tomorrow evening, depending on testimony and time and all that. It's another complex issue that will take a while. Members, we're adjourned.